You and your degenerate friends already waste enough time thinking about disc golf. But just in case, here's some extra material on the Fish Golf Broadcast. On this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I'm welcoming a new guest, Cynthia Ricciotti. Cynthia, what you thinking about?
I'm thinking about Lightning McQueen Crocs now that you said it. I really want a new pair, and they've come out with some new ones, so.
Okay, so first off, Crocs. Second, Lightning McQueen Crocs?
Yes, sir. They are my pride and joy. I always say that they are the most valuable thing I own. Besides my phone, besides my discs, these Lightning McQueen Crocs are my life, and I wear them so much. Don't ask me why I have them, because I don't really know, but they're ironic, and I love it.
How did you come by these?
So for the longest time, they actually were a specialty item that Crocs would put out for adult sizes, but they were always in kid sizes. Uh-huh. I could fit the kid size, because I have tiny feet, but they never released them in adult sizes, and if they did, it was in certain batches, and you'd have to like enter a lottery to be able to buy these adult sizes.
How does one find out about a lottery for Crocs?
It's a very niche area of the internet. I love Crocs. I've been a longtime Croc wearer, user, lifer. But these Lightning McQueen Crocs were like the holy grail at the time. I got mm-hmm. them 2 years ago. So I entered the lottery and I actually got it. And it's not like they give you a free pair, but like you got the right to buy this $60 pair of Crocs. And I love them.
I assume that should more come out, you're going to try to acquire more pairs, like a lifetime supply of McQueen Crocs.
I think they're my brand at this point.
Yeah, sure.
They're a part of it. I can't let it go.
Man, I know for a long time, okay, I don't really subscribe to the stupid internet arguments about hot dogs v sandwiches, are they sandwiches, or pineapple on pizza, or like the acceptability of Crocs. Like, I'm not going to wear Crocs. You're not going to catch me wearing Crocs, but it's fine if you do that. What kind of resistance have you faced from friends, enemies, family for your Croc wearing habits?
I think they're used to me just doing some really like wacky and weird things. That anything I do doesn't really surprise them at this point. But I did have them shipped to my mom's house while I was on tour. Mm-hmm. And she's like, Cynthia, you have this shipment from Crocs and they're in a car's box. Why are they in a car's box? I'm like, oh, they're just Lightning McQueen Crocs. And she's like, what are you talking about? Yeah. My friends don't care. They know this is par for the course.
Sure, of course. And I got to ask, is this the only Cars branded Croc that Crocs has made? Or are there Mater Crocs? Are there, who's the little Italian shrimpy guy?
They just came out with Mater Crocs, actually. I've thought about it. They just came out with Buzz Lightyear Crocs. But on some level, I'm like a loyalist to my objects. And right. So like, I feel like I'll just let these Lightning McQueen Crocs die. And if Mater comes along and I feel like I want to put dookie colored brown Crocs on my feet, I'm gonna do that eventually.
I mean, they won't show dirt.
This is There's true. I've had to clean these Cars Crocs so many times because they light up and the lights will get very dull and they don't really light up anymore.
Wow. So. Okay. Speaking of dirt, I asked Trevin Crow last week how much dog hair was in that, referring to the van that he bought third hand from you and Kyle.
Yes. Well, In our defense, okay, he wanted to buy the van. We had, I think, 3 days, not even 3 days, I think 2 days to, like, get all of our stuff out and do a deep clean. Because, like, we'll keep it clean for us, but, mm-hmm. like, at some point you just succumb to the fact that you have a dog, it sheds, and that's just what it is. Like, if you live with a golden retriever, you live in whatever this dog decides to leave out of its body.
And not only that, like a van is a small space and y'all lived in it continuously for 2+ years, right?
Right. 2 years. Yeah. So I think we did our best, but we told them, we're like, there are nooks and crannies in this thing and you might be finding hair in this for the next 6 months, but it's part of the gig. If you want the van, we have some blonde glitter.
Sure. Of course. And you know, you say that's life with a golden retriever. Yeah. That's the case regardless of whether you're in a house with hardwood floors or what.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
You are now in an RV. Tell me about switching to that rather than just van life.
Yeah, it's been super great. It's been super smooth. The thing about my partner is Kyle Klein, and we have traveled together since we've started touring. We lived in the van. I don't feel comfortable driving big rigs, and so for 2 years I did not drive. Kyle did exclusively all of our driving, and that meant that if I had to go somewhere, he was a saint and took me there. Now that we have our RV, which is like a 30-foot Class A, so it's not like a huge Class A, but it's big enough for us to be comfortable. We tow a Ford C-Max, and I can just go kart around town, and for the first time on tour, we're kind of independent from each other in that sense, which is super fun. It's kind of liberating for me because I get to like drive myself to the course in the morning and feel like everybody else. Yeah, I've loved it so far. Sunny, our golden retriever, has loved the switch. Maybe not all aspects of the switch.
More room to stretch out.
Right? Yeah, but she loved the van. A lot of people were like, how did you live with Sunny in the van? And we're like, well, we got her when we were already in it. And so that was her life. That was literally all she knew. She was like tied to it. She's seen the van after we have now rehomed it to Drevin. And she's like, oh my gosh. We're like, no, it's it's not yours, but I get it. I get it.
That's great. I feel like the first time I met Sunny, it was at about 90 miles an hour because Sunny had been in the van all day as y'all played your rounds.
Yeah.
And there was just no stopping that dog.
Especially like before she turned about two. Mm-hmm. That was this past winter. She was, yeah, 100 miles an hour all the time. And it didn't matter if she had played all day or not. Like she would get in the van and crash. But the second you let her out, she was just this big ball of energy, which is nice sometimes, but other times not. But but yeah, she was just so acclimated to the van and loved it. But she loved her outside time too, especially because she was a bouncing baby golden retriever. And if anyone knows a golden retriever, they have one thought in their mind, and that is just like happy, go play, run, happy. Like that's all she is. So sure.
It's like all of us when we get to the disc golf course.
Maybe not all of
maybe
us.
Not, okay.
Should be all of us.
So you also added another dog, is that correct?
Yes.
Tell us about this other one.
When we got Sunny, like we realized that she loved other people. She loved other dogs. She just loved that aspect of life. And we always said that like, yeah, down the line, the most we want is two. Because if we get to that point with her, after we got off tour this past year, so for the 2023 season, and she was away from all her dog friends on tour, she was away from all of her friends on tour, everyone she knew, she was just with us two, and she got super depressed. And if you know Sunny, she's literally nothing but happy, and she was not herself. She was laying on the floor all day, just like sighing deep sighs.
Seasonal
and like,
affective dog disorder.
Literally. And we were like, we can't watch this anymore. And so we're like, maybe should we complete this little family we've got going? Because we'd always talked about it. But we said, unless we have a different circumstance, being the RV, which
yeah,
we were already doing, we're like, I mean, if we're going to do it, might as well do it. Because we got the van, and a month later, we got Sunny. And so we're like, well, why don't we just do that? So we don't know RV life without two dogs. So it's not like we're like missing anything. It's not like we're saying, well, I miss when it was just us three in the RV. We never had that. So now it's just us four in the RV, and we have added a little baby German Shepherd, long coat German Shepherd. So more hair, but more colors, which is fun. And he's just been such a great addition. Another boy, so we're all evened out.
What's his name?
Hudson.
Hudson,
yeah,
okay.
Hudson Phoenix Ricciotti Klein is his full legal government name.
It's an awful lot going on there.
we love it.
What's Sunny's full government name?
Sunshine Willow Ricciotti Klein.
What? Okay. how do you come up with these?
So we
like,
always
the,
have
the
like,
Ricciotti Klein part is self-explanatory.
Right. We always say like, okay, whatever name we don't use is going to be the middle name. And I've kind of passed that on to my dad because my dad actually just got a golden retriever puppy as well. And she's Lucy Meadow. We decided that if we weren't going to name her Sunshine, her name was going to be Willow. And I think both would have worked, but Sunshine Willow is just so fitting to who she is. And we actually had more names to choose from with Hudson. It was like, my first obsession name was Baloo, because, I don't know, it just felt cute. But it was like Baloo or Phoenix or, what was the other one? Griffin or Hudson. And we decided Hudson was like more fitting, but Phoenix was like the close runner up. So we always just did it like that. The winner and then the runner up.
Sure, sure. Okay, that's good. And any Cars theme there? Like,
I didn't think about it, but Doc Hudson is a character in Cars. And so we kind of started calling him Doc for fun if he's being a bad boy. But mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't call him by his government name when he's a bad boy.
That's probably for the best. What do your parents call you when you're bad?
Not a bad kid, but I always got the Cynthia Josephine pulled out.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, it was just the middle name. Other than that, I didn't really do any bad stuff.
Okay, so you're considerably younger than me. And when I was going to college, I didn't know about disc golf. I had no idea that there was a pro scene. There really wasn't that much of a pro scene unless you were like super grinding it.
Yeah.
And you had the good fortune of like jumping. Did you win Amateur Worlds?
I won Junior Worlds.
Junior Worlds. Okay.
Yeah, I never competed in Emeralds.
So you had the good fortune of like having that competitive experience and jumping into pro right as like the tour was a reality for a lot of folks. Like sponsorships had evolved, media had evolved. The Disc Golf Pro Tour was like well established at that point. Was there ever any pushback from family or others about, you know, what your college or career goals might be?
I mean, not necessarily pushback. I got into the sport with my dad and he served as like my funder, my coach, and he was my dad. So he took me to all my tournaments and he was with me from the time I started when I was 12 all the way up until I basically went on tour in 2020, but it was what the tour was for 2020.
Yeah.
So he really did not care which way I decided to go. My mom was just along for the ride. She's like, I support you in whatever you do.
And that's great. Like,
yeah.
I think the hope for most parents is like, you don't have to do exactly what they want you to do, but they give you the tools and the resources to make decisions and try stuff.
Right. And back to what I said, I wasn't really a bad kid at all. I was straight A student, a very straight line.
Nerd.
Yeah, literally. No, I was. I was a band nerd. I could cry anytime I was in any sort of trouble, which was very seldom. But even if my teacher was like, hey, Cynthia, stop talking, I'd be like, please don't yell at me. Like, it was severe. And so
Can I hazard a guess? It was difficult for you to stop talking in class.
It really was. I had friends, but all my friends were the nerd friends. And so like we were taking notes and paying attention. And if I leaned over and they saw me or something, I was a good kid. So leaning into that, my parents had no reservations about me doing whatever I wanted to do because they trusted me to make the right decision for myself and make the smart decision like I had done for the last, 17 years. Because I really didn't decide like senior year or anything. I decided when COVID hit because that was my junior year. So I like to say I went to school for 2.5 years because I never went back to school again in like early March of my junior year. But yeah, they very much supported me and they knew that I was going to make the best decision for myself.
Here you are. It's worked out. You also, there are always opportunities to go do other stuff.
Right. It's a little different because I was a really good student. I had big opportunities either way I went. I was a, fun fact, most people don't know this, but I was a national finalist for a scholarship that aided high achieving, low income students. And so I was, applying to like Stanford and Duke and Harvard and stuff like that. And I decided not to go that route because it really did not make me happy.
Yeah, but by now you could be a hedge fund manager.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You like BlackRock could be employing you.
Well, I would be a junior in college right now, but I just did not see myself loving what I was doing. And I feel a little bit of guilt in that because I could have done really well if I went that route. But I also knew that if I didn't go full into disc golf like I wanted to do, I would A, regret it, and 2, probably not go back because I would have been successful in what I was doing and not see the grass being greener on the other side. But yeah, no regrets for sure.
Well, that's great. And like, when else are you going to have the freedom to go play in like 30 states every year?
Exactly. And when am I going to be a little bit crazy enough to do that, to jump in and say, let's do it, let's go all in, than a 17-year-old, 18-year-old girl who never had a job,
sure,
never had a real adult responsibility. You might as well just learn it while you're doing it.
I'm Nicola Castro, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I take a morning poop. Of course.
Hi, I'm AJ Carey, and I listen to Fish Golf broadcast while I take a dump.
You know, I spent all of season one in this very ad break saying that we would never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads. But lately, I've had a change of heart. The integrity of this show absolutely has a price. We're talking lake house money. Private island money. Lake house on a private island money. But until that hypothetical benevolent corporate overlord speaks up, though, this show is entirely supported by your support of me and my sponsors. Fish Stamp Discraft discs are available in-store and online at daddydiscgolf.com, dischub.com, and treemagnets.com, and fishdiscgolf.com when I'm not traveling. You can save 10% at Grip Equipment with the code FISHGIFT10 at checkout, unless you're a fool who likes spending full price on disc golf bags. And of course, our name is derived from Disc Golf Bra, whose media channels and website you should visit for outstanding New England content. And now, more mutual hostility between Fish and the guest. Cynthia, a little birdie told me that you like musicals. Tell me about your favorite musical.
Oh boy, I have a very large loyalty to Hamilton, and that's a really basic answer, it really is, but I was in middle school when Hamilton came out. So imagine stupid glasses wearing, mismatched clothes. I was just a really weird child. And
I can see it now.
Yeah, you can with my Hasbulla shirt I've got going on. I was a really weird child, and I was a nerd, and Hamilton came out, and I'm like, oh my gosh, musicals about history. Like, my little mind was blown. And so I leaned hard into this Hamilton fandom. And if you weren't on the internet at that time, or you didn't really know about that, it was big. Like, the obsession with not only the musical, but the people involved in the original Broadway cast was insane. And Vine was still a thing at the time.
R.I.P.
I know, right? I mean, it turned into Musical.ly and TikTok, but it's not the same. But yeah, I love Hamilton. I know every single lyric to that two-hour masterpiece. But that honestly segued me into learning about other musicals. Waitress, In the Heights, which is also written also by the same person. But those are really basic answers. I won't say I'm a musical connoisseur, but I love musical theater, and I love the idea of it, and I'm obsessed with it. And it's a great way to like pass time on a road trip.
Sure. So is that your default consumption of it? Like, do you get a soundtrack album and play that, or what?
Kyle can tell you, he can attest to this. I don't listen to a song all the way through on a road trip. I have a very short attention span, and I will accredit that to my obsession with the internet and TikTok. I can't sit down and watch a movie, let alone sit through a song. So yeah, I'll just switch around when my mood gets different. So I'll go from Hamilton to Drake to, I don't know, country, and it's very sporadic.
Well, I can't imagine that if you went to a musical that would go over really well if you just hollered out, skip, next.
No, it wouldn't. I did see Hamilton. I think, let me see, what year was that? So I was 15 when I went.
Where'd you go?
It was in St. Louis. So back then there was a program called EduHam, and it basically, the touring cast, so the tour, followed these cities, and they would let schools come in and bring their American history class, and you would go and see Hamilton for $10, kind of a nod to Alexander Hamilton being on our $10 bill. And so that, at the time, I was a freshman. The American history class in Missouri is your junior year, and so I took it upon myself to email the American history teacher and be like, please, Hamilton is my life. I would cry and do anything for you if you needed it. I just really want to go. And they got back to me and they're like, yeah, we can make a few exceptions. And so I got to go for $10 and see Hamilton. And if you know about Hamilton, the front burst out of music in the beginning is very like heavy drums. And it's just a very iconic opening riff, and I just started bawling my eyes out. I was done. I was trying to be quiet. We're in a theater, but I couldn't. I grabbed the person next to me, barely knew them. I was a weird kid. But
did that lead to any razzing when you got back to school?
No, because I didn't care.
Okay,
that's another thing too. It's like I was not self-aware of how like boisterous and annoying I was. That like if I did know, I didn't care.
Okay, I believe that people shouldn't like things ironically. You should like things because you like them. Be all in on the things that you do like.
I mean, I am wearing a Hasbulla shirt ironically at the moment, but yes, I do agree. I do agree. There's certain aspects of your life that is healthy to love ironically because you find them funny. But Hamilton, I loved unironically. Inexplicable love. I can't even explain it now. And I don't listen to it every day. I used to. It used to be the only thing I listened to. But now I just kind of like love it from afar and let it spread its wings and let myself move away from it. But I got Kyle onto it. He now knows all the lyrics to it because he was a hater. He really was. And then I played it for him and he's like, oh my God. So it changed his life like it changed mine.
Well, that's great. You've suckered other people in too. So do you feel like for people who don't like musicals but could be swayed, is that like a really good entry point?
I think so, because the whole purpose of it, Lin-Manuel Miranda said, I want to take a topic that is so outdated and archaic, which is our founding father situation, the American Revolution, and I want to put it in a mainstream genre of music, and that's rap.
Oh yeah, Schoolhouse Rock wasn't good enough for you.
I'm just a bill. It's just not cutting it for the American public at the time. But he made something that was almost inaccessible to a lot of people because they didn't, no one cared about American history, and he turned it into something that was easily digestible to the masses, which was popular music. And so he took people that, like me, had never really like super been into musicals before and opened their world to like how crazy good they can be. And it also changed the game of what musicals can be as well. You think about like Wicked or Chicago, and those are very like structured traditional musicals, what you think of when you think of Broadway, and yeah. He flipped the script.
Instead of being like a big ornate production, it's almost like just watching actors do their thing.
Exactly. And it's like watching people that know that it's, you know, at the time it was 2015, know what 2015 is doing right now. Like, we're not singing like Wizard of Oz anymore. We're singing, or we're rapping, and we're, you know, grooving to a, that's really cringy, but we're grooving to like a different type of musical, and that it paved the way for a lot of musicals to come.
Sure. And I'm not that into musicals, but you know, I know enough of the history. Like Fiddler on the Roof doesn't have that much appeal to a modern audience,
exactly.
Right? Because it was much more relevant to the time that it was being produced.
Exactly.
And to the place that it was evoking. Anyway, maybe you need to write a disc golf musical that'll draw us all in.
Like I said, I don't have the attention span for that. I'm also like too into disc golf for that, but that would be fun.
Yeah, sure. Speaking of being too into disc golf, you know, I mentioned in our first segment about how you happened to hop on tour right as the Pro Tour had really been developed.
Right.
Who were some players in the FPO division or any other division that you looked up to when you were growing up or thinking about hopping on tour, and like, did they influence how you practiced and played?
Right. So as a little backstory, I started when I was 12. So this was 2014. And if you think about the people that were around then, it was like Val Jenkins was kind of still there, of course, because she won her title in 2016. But, you know, Val Jenkins, Paige, Katrina, it was that like trifecta of just like really good women. And there wasn't a ton, but it was them. And mm-hmm. they were they were God to me. I like to say that I consumed every piece of disc golf media, especially FPO disc golf media, from like 2014 to 2016, because there wasn't a ton. So I looked up FPO disc golf, women disc golf in YouTube, and would just sit hours upon hours and watch Paige and Katrina and Val just smoke everybody. So yeah, Paige was like my gal. And growing up, my dad would take me to like GBO at the time, because that was 4 hours away where I grew up in Missouri. And I would meet all the players, and that was like my favorite thing. I was a tween, and so that was my obsession. Those were my Backstreet Boys. Like, aside from the One Direction lover I was, those were the people that I thought were gods and were my idols.
What's the most awkward interaction that you initiated with a pro?
Oh, I think it was Dave Felberg.
Yes, this is so great. Go on.
Oh gosh. At the time, I was like being talked to be a part of like the, I can't even say it, to be a part of like the Latitude junior team. And I didn't know what to say to people. I was like, it's very awkward. But I was good at talking to people, but I hated initiating the conversation. Mm. And we were in like the Emporia DD store, and I tapped him on the shoulder, and he was turned away from me. And I said, "Greetings, Mr. Felberg," because I didn't know what else to say. And it was this really awkward conversation. Other than that, I think it like the first pro I met was Paige and Paul. And I saw Paul in the parking lot, and I was like working up the courage to try to go take a picture with him, and he was like walking to his car. And we have since now laughed about this with him, but he was walking to his car and he was about to get in his car, and I just start sprinting because my chance and my window was closing. Mm-hmm. And I was so awkward. I'm like, "Can you take a picture with me?" And he's like, "Yeah," to this like weird looking sunburnt little girl. I do have the picture.
Oh, me, oh my. I might have to throw this in show notes or something. I've never done that before.
It's embarrassing, but I think it's seen the light of day enough on the internet. Paul took my phone and made it himself send it to himself. not to stop this podcast,
but yeah, you nailed it.
Yeah, it was a lot. This was like just after the Frosted Tips, Paul phase, uh-huh. Comb over, like Innova, full Innova, yeah. Like.
You look like a Far Side character.
I don't know what that is, and I don't know if to take that as a compliment.
It's not great. It's kind of like caricature in that, like,
oh, you. Oh, great! Yeah, I love that.
In that, like, you described yourself sunburned. You know, you're.
Stop it! What?
Not every Far Side character is as weird as what you surely just Googled.
Maybe not, but I mean, I would agree. I was a really funky looking kid who did not. I owned a mirror, but it looked like I didn't.
Well, you live in a van now. So
I have a full size bathroom. Are we allowed to curse on this show?
Fuck yeah.
I have a shitter and a shower in my and my living space, and that's crazy to me.
So now the shoe's on the other foot. You are the pro. What's the most awkward interaction that somebody has initiated with you as a fan?
No, I've transformed into such a cool cucumber. I'm cool and collected at all times.
But what's awkward? What makes them awkward? What fan has been awkward to you?
Oh, fan. I think the most awkward fan interactions I've had are people thinking that I'm Cadence Burge or the other way around.
I will admit, I've been fooled from across the course until I see you throw or Cadence throw.
Yeah. I like to say she has way longer hair, way prettier hair than me. But yeah, it's always that awkward, like, do I tell them? Do I not? I've not told many people, and I'll just sign my name, or I'll be like, yeah, nice to meet you, and let them walk away. Because the people I've told, they are just so broken up over it. They're like, I'm so sorry. I do know who you are. I didn't think about it. I'm like, it's really fine. Like, I'm not losing sleep over it, but it is very, very funny because we do look a lot alike. At the time, like maybe like 2 years ago, I had black glasses, which really aids to it because so does she. And we are both on Dysmania now, so it's much harder to tell the difference. But we do, I think we do need to get together and like film like a YouTube round and just point out the differences and let people know.
Sure. Or like vend next to each other.
Yes, exactly.
Hi, my name is.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's it like? Surely you've been on a card with many of those players that you admired or looked up to.
Yeah.
What's that like?
The first time I was shitting bricks, like for real, because I won Junior Worlds. Paige Pierce caddied for me to my Junior Worlds win. Mind blown as a 15-year-old girl. Like, your idol is showing up for you and supporting you and turning you away from the leaderboard to keep you focused. I'm like, no, this is what you should be doing right now. This should be the other way around. And so it blew my mind. And then a couple short months later, I think literally a month later, I played my first Pro Tour event, which was Ledgestone. I just, like, on a whim, I'm like, I haven't even, like, played like AM Worlds. I'm just gonna go play a pro event and see how I do. And I end up on the chase card on the second day as a 15-year-old girl.
Sick.
And I'm playing with Paige Pierce and Sarah Hokum and someone else, and I can't remember for the life of me who it was. I'm so sorry. But at the time, like, those were my idols. And so I'm shitting bricks. Rebecca Cox. Shitting bricks. I'm like, I shouldn't be here. Imposter syndrome was real. Like, there are so many people under me on the cards, like behind, like in front of me right now. I should not be in front of them. I'm not that person. I was. I just didn't really know it. And so Paige has always been such a kind and great person. And not, I wouldn't say mentor, but role model growing up. And it was the first time, it was like such an honor to play with her. And it still feels like that, because still in me is that 15-year-old girl who looked up to her and idolized her. And yeah, I still feel a little bit of that imposter syndrome. But I also feel so blessed that I can, you know, in some instances hang with them, and I am in that pro field and I do belong here.
Yeah, for sure. And there's something about being on the road that just like unifies all of us, regardless of whether you've won a world title or not. You're still putting in the same level of effort. You're playing
right.
Your practice rounds, you're putting every evening. You are doing all the things that it takes to be a pro disc golfer.
Right. And I think growing up, especially within the age of media, disc golf media, and having such a widespread of things to watch and ways to get to know a player, growing up into that and then now being put into the same pool as everyone else, into the same like social pools and everything else, this has been such a weird transition, because it's like knowing everything about your friends before you're friends with them.
Hmm.
Like, so nowadays I can call Paige a friend. I can call Paul a friend. But like in my mind, I'm still like, I ran up to him awkwardly in a parking lot for a picture. Like I would never do that now. He's just Paul and that's just Paige.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's kind of insane. And how that new wave of media has affected getting on tour and the relationships people have on tour now. Because I mean, I'm kind of digressing, but
there are no digressions on the Fish Golf broadcast.
Because I will yap and yap and yap. I feel like back then, everyone knew each other because it was a small field. But now everyone knows each other because we all follow each other on social media. And now part of our brands and part of our livelihood is put into how vulnerable and how much of myself can I give to the mass of people who follow me, or the mass of people in disc golf. And so we all follow each other and we're learning things about each other without even having a face-to-face interaction with them. So if you point to any person on tour right now, I could probably spew 5 facts about them that you wouldn't just know by seeing them, but I'm not friends with them, or I haven't had real like interactions with them before. And I think that's kind of crazy.
Some players are more comfortable than others at sharing their struggles, whether it's play or personal.
Right.
But that it's important to show that you are like a 3-dimensional human.
Right.
Right. Like that's something that I really like doing on this show, is now people know you like your Lightning McQueen
right.
Crocs.
Yeah.
And if they didn't judge you before, they might now.
That's fine. I get so much hate anyway. Just add to the bucket.
Well, that's really neat. So what social media platforms are you on, and how do you use those differently from each other?
So I try to, I am chronically on the internet. It's very bad, but also I kind of take it as my job as well. I am mainly on Instagram. That is where you'll find me posting most often. Like, I have grossed almost 70,000 followers on Instagram. Everyone says I bought them. I swear on my life I didn't. Anyway, that's a different story. So I've had several like large viral videos go on Instagram, and I've kind of dedicated that to being my like main thing. And I think that goes for most disc golfers. I've tried the YouTube thing. Again, attention span is small. So like I can't watch a long form video, let alone sit here for 3 hours and edit a long form video. But I did enjoy vlogging. It is fun. It's just a lot of work. I think I'd do it if I had an editor. And I also have TikTok, but I will never tell you what my TikTok name is. And I don't think anyone really ever find out, because that platform is for me to like sit there for 8 hours and scroll TikTok.
But. Boy, well, 8 hours is unhealthy, but I think that's important. I know a few people who just have like a burner account on Twitter or Instagram,
and
like
that as well,
that's where they follow only their friends right. or something. In the same way that you know about many of your competitors from what they post on social media, your fans also know quite a bit about you based on what you post there. And that creates these like weird parasocial relationships where somebody that you've never met can walk up to you at a tournament and start a conversation that's like, what, how did we get here?
Exactly. I think the thing I run into most is like, where's Sunny? And I'm like, I have to think for a second. I'm like, how do you know who Sunny is? And I remember, I'm like, oh my gosh, she has a freaking Instagram account. Like, or I post her in Hudson sometimes more than I post myself, because I'm a dog parent and that's what we do. But it is kind of crazy. And I do struggle a little bit with like the balance of what I share and what I don't share, because it can be really awkward if a fan comes up to me, if they're really bold and it's like, oh man, and this did not happen, I'm just using this as an example. Oh man, I'm sorry your grandma died. Like, what do you say to that? Or like, what do you say to these very personal parts about you that people know now that you share them? So I don't do that, but I very much try to share as much as I feel comfortable with on the internet, because you do grow a fan base and people do feel connected to you. And it's not just to, you know, get dollars in your pocket or to get consumers behind you, but it is about, you know, connecting with people who truly support you. But it is also a business. Your brand is your business, and you have to use that to your advantage, and you have to at least make people feel comfortable enough and like you enough to buy your stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of us who are on the road feel that.
Like, right.
You can play as well as possible, but unless you're the rare person like a Calvin Heimberg who just like doesn't care about social media, might let somebody else run his account and just shreds, like it's very rare that you can achieve a fan base on that alone.
Right. I think it's honestly, it's either a healthy balance or it's one or the other. And the only way I think you can survive in this day and age, in modern day disc golf and the disc golf market, without social media, is to be the number one player in the world. Okay. And even then, I don't think it's enough.
Well, personally, I can't wait until I am the number one player in the world and can quit social media entirely.
But you don't, you're going to quit this podcast?
I will never quit the broadcast. The broadcast, the broadcast will live forever in infamy, I hope. Until that time, though, you can find me on Instagram and whatever the fuck Twitter is at fish58320.
It's X now, actually.
Ugh, again, whatever it's the X, fuck Twitter is.
But we still call them tweets.
And
America, explain.
I can't wait until that platform makes me pay to use it, because I will quit that day. And I just want to do it so bad.
Now there's Threads, though.
Nope, hate it, don't want it. Don't want anything new. Someday you will be the age that I am now.
How old are you?
35. And you will have met all the people you want to meet. You will have been all the places you want to go. And you will have surfed all of the internet sites that you want to surf. And you'll just want to sit on a porch in a rocking chair and sip your coffee. That's all you'll want to do.
Half of me feels like that now. But also half of me is my Found phone a- congratulating me because I went down 27% for screen time last week and only averaged about 11 hours a day.
Good heavens. Well, if you hated this podcast, Cynthia, where can people find you to holler about it?
My Instagram is cynthia.disc. You can find me on YouTube and some really shitty YouTube videos at Cynthia Ricciotti. Yeah, I think those are the only two places people can find me, because my Facebook is pretty much reserved for my mom's friends at this point. to That's wish me happy birthday.
That's very sweet. And do you have any discs or other merch for sale so people can support you and your dog's extravagant lifestyle?
Oh my, extravagant. She's going to love that you said that. I think I still have a little bit left of my Lightning McQueen croc, or I can't say that, copyright issues, but Ka-chow croc stamped essences. It is a crocodile on a hot rod on an essence. So go pick one of those up at dismania.net, or you can stop by my link tree in my Instagram bio and find a lot of ways to support me. Whale sacks, Great Lakes discs, grip, all of it.
That's marvelous. Disney, Pixar, come at me with everything you got.
They're going to shut down the broadcast.
That's a wrap on this week's Fish Golf Broadcast. Join us next week to fritter away more of your ever-waning life force on two jabronis talking about Frisbee. Please support the show, if you're able, by shopping for fish stuff at fishdiscgolf.com, Daddy Disc Golf, Disc Hub, Tree Magnets, and Disc Golf Bras websites. You can still save 10% at Grip Equipment with the code FISHGIFT10, and please tell a friend about this show. Unless you don't have any friends, but that's your problem, not mine.